for anybody that is in business, if you're not working on yourself on a personal level, I think it's really difficult to be working on yourself on a professional level. So I had a lot of blind spots when it came to a lot of things. So now I firmly believe that it's my job to be like a servant leader, if you would to. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here to support my team as best that I can to help them achieve their goals.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the John Hoffman. He is the founder and operations manager of Fusion Marketing. He's one of my people. He is from Detroit, Michigan, along with Eminem. He overcame significant early life challenges to become a seasoned professional with over a decade of experience in marketing and branding. And a decade is, I don't know, 70 years in marketing years. It's like dog years. His passion for inspiring others and bringing dreams to life is matched by his commitment to community service, demonstrated through his family's urban gardening organization, which is really cool, that supports underprivileged families and educates children on sustainability. His journey exemplifies resilience, creativity, and the profound impact of giving back. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's not every day I get a mohawked friend on the podcast. So I'm glad to have you firmly rooted in the driver's seat there.
Yeah, maybe you have to change that, right?
I might. I don't know. I'll have to just let people know. Hey, I was like, do you have a mohawk? I already got that position filled. Right. You're going to have to find someone else to be friends with.
Pre-qualify them.
Do that. Tell me, John, what is on your mind?
Lately, we're getting into the warmer season. And I've really been thinking about my upbringing. And we won't spend a lot of time on that, but I grew up extremely poor over on the east side of Detroit. Through a series of events, I've gotten to where I am now, right? Where I'm comfortable. And having that experience firsthand has like really shaped everything that I do. And over the years, I think it's been like 21 years I've been in business now. It's really like, it's shaped the way that I approach things, like the things that are important to me, or my ability to empathize or connect with people, and really seeing that firsthand, like really, really makes like helping people is at the core of like my entire being. As you mentioned, community garden, that's the big thing that's been eating up all of my time recently. It's grow time now. Last year we did about 1,000 pounds, 1,100. And this year we're going to be shooting for a ton of produce. So 2,000 pounds that we grow, log, and distribute to the most vulnerable in the community.
That is phenomenal. It sounds like you're purposed towards being the kind of help that maybe you wish you had when you were growing up.
Yeah, for certain. It wasn't until maybe, it was recent, so it was maybe like 3 years ago that I really figured this out, like the whole Simon Sinek, like the whole what's your why? And looking back, my background is in alternative nutrition, right? Mm-hmm. So I opened up a health food store. And I was trying to help people take control of their health. And then I transitioned into marketing, where now I'm overseeing an agency and we're helping people take control of their business and chase their dreams and all of that. And then we have the nonprofit and all of the other things that I've been involved with, from community service and domestic violence and et cetera, et cetera. I would say yes, like really trying to, I'm really trying to show up and be there for everybody else, much like I needed.
What's always fascinating to me is when people, regardless of age, really, they go through hardships, how do they come out the other side? Or even if it's not, it was all stormy and now it's all sunshine, I think that it's not always as polarizing as that. But do they do similar to you and say, I don't want that for anybody else, and I now have insider knowledge of the gaps in systems and accessibility or whatever it is. But other people are like, I just want to focus on never being there again, and I climbed out, but and so you can too. You're on your own because no one's coming to help you. That's always fascinating to me, and I'm curious, how have you seen others who maybe you grew up with? Like, what's their lifestyle like now? Are they purposed towards reaching back and extending a hand, or just making sure they don't end up there again?
Yeah. So to make sure that I understand your question correctly, for people that have faced hardship, or been at the bottom, are like, does that change their perspective where they want to help others and give back and have a different perception? Or are they still just living in a capitalistic society? They're just a cog in the machine, like moving through it as themselves?
Yeah, I would almost maybe boil it down to, were they able to keep their heart soft, or did their heart to where, and I would say you'd fall into that category, to where you didn't let the hard times beat the humanity out of you, so to speak? Or are you seeing that that's rare, and most people, they come through and they become hardened, and they're not really looking for those opportunities to fix systems or processes or create opportunities for other people to get a leg up?
Yeah. So I think that, I think there's a lot of different layers to that, right? Probably sure. More than we could even dig into today.
Yeah.
I do know that, like, I'm really jaded in a lot of aspects of my life. Like my faith in humanity is so little. I don't trust that. However, I do know that I can do what I can do today. So I can do that. I can't change policy. I can't change the world. I can't do any of these things, but I can hold the door for somebody. I can smile at somebody or treat a person at the restaurant with respect. Right. And yeah. I've seen one of my favorite stories was when I used to feed the homeless every weekend. Over the train station over in Detroit just got a facelift. That's been national news. So we used to do it right in front of that. There's a park, and we would feed the homeless every week. And there was a gentleman, I won't name him, and he was strung out on heroin, and he was like bottom of the barrel. And he was coming there in this assembly line of getting food every weekend. And through a series of events, the organization I was working with ended up renting out an entire complex, all of the rooms inside of it, and putting all of these homeless people up for the winter. They leaned on the community. They did this. Everybody had someplace warm to go for the season, right? It didn't solve any. It made a difference for a lot of individuals. It didn't fix any of the systematic issues that exist.
Right.
He ended up going into rehab. He ended up getting a job through like a temp agency or whatever that was. He ended up getting hired in there. The following season, the next year, the next spring, we're there, we're doing it. This time he shows up, he's on the other side of the table, and he's so grateful for the opportunity. Like somebody gave him that hand up when he was off of his feet. And then he was there every weekend giving back, acting as an inspiring everybody else, saying, hey, I was where you are. This is my journey. I'm not better. I'm still struggling. I'm doing all of these things, but I'm here. So I think it's fair to say that most humans want things to be not terrible.
Yeah.
I think that's such a small percentile of people that's, I just doom and gloom. I want everything to like get out of my way. I think everybody, like, we have different methods of maybe getting there or different ideologies behind that. But I think we want it to like to suck less, right?
Yeah. It doesn't have to be marvelous and right. I have to have a private jet to feel okay. It's just could this suck a little less? Could I take a next step? Because there's a psychological concept known as learned helplessness. And unfortunately, they had to use dogs in that research. I won't get into that. Please don't email me. I didn't conduct the research. But I know that even in times of hardship in my life, and I would say I lead a fairly blessed life. It's not free from problems or pain or anything. You and I were chatting a little before we turned on the recording about a couple of those things that are recent. So it's not free from any of those things. But there are times when I don't need to just be like standing on top of the world, but I would love this to be maybe a little easier in this moment. Although somebody listening could take the opposite stance of without resistance, you'd ever build the muscle and the resilience, and your hardships and adversities can turn you into who you are. And I'm a firm believer in that. I think that's something that you and I have probably talked about on a previous conversation of just the act of starting, building, growing, sustaining a business and what that does to you, that may also shake your faith in humanity as well.
True story.
I love the story about that guy. He's just taking his next step it sucks mm-hmm. a little less. He's not out of the woods, but maybe seeing someone a few steps ahead may give that person on the side of the table he used to be on just a leg up, or give them hope that they too could make it a little further, make it a little better, make it suck a little less for themselves, that there's opportunities. I'd be curious, as you have done, you've done this sort of work for a while, even though 3 years trying to do this, when you said you found your why, that could still be a long time, but it wasn't the first time you thought about it. Where do you find the motivation and the resilience to keep reaching out? Because in my experience, even reaching out and saying, I'm going to do a good thing, I want to help, even though maybe you feel jaded about humanity, maybe you see people that are unwilling to do some of the basic things to help themselves. Like, you're okay helping them, but you would say, you got to be a participant in your own recovery. You have to be a participant in getting out of this hardship.
Sure.
How do you sustain motivation when seeing that? Because you are on the other side. You are a great example of what's possible if you claw and scratch and stay determined and stay grounded.
Yeah. So I fortunately, unfortunately, I know the answer to this, and it's childhood trauma.
Is what it is.
I had a really, really rough time. Both of my parents were alcoholics. I spent a lot of my childhood without running water or electricity. Essentially, I lived in a condemnable house. There was rats and all of that. So I've seen that, right? Like I remember during the winter when there was no heat, taking all of the clothes that I owned and putting them on the blanket to make it heavier so that I would stay warmer at night. Like, it was really messed up, right? That was mm-hmm. a rough. I don't want to minimize that experience for myself at all. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But like that really, like that, I have like so much trauma from that experience. It really fuels, and like it scared me into wanting to help everybody else never have to do that. If you can think of a mild parent that has had some sort of, that was bit by a dog, you're going to want to protect your child from dogs. Like, you don't ever want your child to experience that. Right. Yeah. So it kind of scared me into, and I like, I'm not even sure exactly how to articulate that. I think you get what I'm throwing down, though. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I've seen it. I don't want anybody else to have to see that. Right.
It's not an intellectual practice for you to imagine what it's like to do that and what it might be like for a person you desire to help, what they're going through. You can have a visceral experience with that condition. And that has helped motivate you to say, I want to try to take that away, if at all possible, if it's within my power. Like you said, maybe not change the world. I love the phrase. I don't know who to attribute it to, but you probably can't change the world, but you could make a dent in the universe. That's all you're trying to do, is make your dent. And that's what I hear you saying, is at least in the universe known as Detroit, Michigan, you can make a dent. For some people, for as long as you're able and willing. I would be interested in knowing, how has that, taking it out of just the giving back and personal side, bring it into the world of work and being a professional, how has that experience, along with the giving back, how has that informed and shaped your leadership?
Yeah, so I was a toxic leader for a long time, right? Like, I was coming from a place of scarcity, and it was rough. Through personal growth, like me growing as an individual, I was able to learn more how to better help and better provide for my staff, my people, my clients. It's a matter of growth. Like, if you are, for anybody that is in business, if you're not working on yourself on a personal level, I think it's really difficult to be working on yourself on a professional level. So I had a lot of blind spots when it came to a lot of things. So now I really try to, like, it's my job. I firmly believe that it's my job to be like a servant leader, if you would, to like, I'm here to support my team as best that I can to help them achieve their goals. Like, Gary Vaynerchuk preaches that. There's lots of different personalities that kind of preach that similar content and methodology. Yeah. If I can help you get to where you're going, then we're going to be a team and we're all going to win together.
Yeah. I love what you said about, if you're not working on yourself personally, you're skipping a step if you just try to work on yourself professionally. And I was maybe it was this morning, I was having a conversation recently, it seems to come up, is just growing and developing the whole person, right? There's not a business owner, John, and then husband, John, and then dad, John, and then just community leader, John.
It'd be cool if John. I could take, it'd be cool if I could take the hats off every once in a while.
Right. You could just have a different mohawk for each of those.
Different. Yeah.
Yeah. But it sounds like you really see, I got to develop the whole person and take myself wherever I'm at. That person follows me around. In the wise words of my mother, wherever you go, there you are.
Right.
And how have you tried to, I guess, two things. One, what helped you turn the corner? You said you early on were a toxic leader, and then you saw, oh, I got to work on these things to become a better leader and have a sustainable, profitable business. So what turned the corner for you? And then how have you passed that on to the people that you lead?
Yeah. So my wife was adult diagnosed with autism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you know a lot about autism, but it's usually diagnoses are for little boys. So women are commonly, like, the females don't, like, our testing isn't for them, let alone for an adult. Okay.
So shows up differently.
Oh, absolutely. So we figured this out. And through the journey of learning about what this is and what this looks like and all of that, I started to learn that the different ways that her brain works as opposed to my brain works. We started to learn a lot about being neurotypical versus being neurodiverse. And I realized that being in a creative space, right, like marketing agency, every single person that I employ or that I contract is neurodiverse. So I started, like, accidentally, I started this journey to learn about my wife and to better understand her and the way her brain works. And I ended up learning more about my entire team. So that's really, it was this eye-opening experience where it can show up the way that I have been showing up for Kenny. And I'm not being the best John or the best support or the best whatever that is for you. But if we just shift some wording or the way that we're approaching some topics or handing projects off to you or whatever that looks like, our check-ins or our huddles, boom, something clicks. Now you're getting what you need in order to be the best Kenny.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't have the answers. I'm no place finished with this by any means.
Sure. But it sounds like you're meeting your team where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to communicate and work effectively, not in a manipulative sense, but I think that's, if you get into sort of the definition of EQ or emotional intelligence, which has been popular for a little while, but really it's that self-awareness, how do I show up? And then the other half of it is, and how do I impact those around me? And right. It sounds like you really got some illumination or insight into, oh, the way I'm by default just naturally communicating or saying some things,
mm-hmm.
maybe explains some of the friction points I've experienced, and it's not serving these people. And coming from a place of care and concern and compassion for those you lead, you say, I can tweak this about how I communicate, right? Like you held it with an open hand, like you weren't saying, I'm just me, y'all gonna have to deal with it because I'm the owner, right?
Right. Absolutely.
How have you seen that beyond increased productivity? How have you seen that affect those you lead? And if you feel comfortable with it, how has that impacted how you have related to your wife?
Yeah. Well, I mean, having a better understanding of someone or understanding where somebody's coming from, as long as it's, I guess, as long as you're doing this from a place of curiosity, or willingness to grow. Yeah. Like that's real. Like, I don't think that if you meet somebody where they are and you try to have a better understanding of what's going on, like what they're going through or what they're experiencing or how things are working or are not working for that matter, I don't think that there's any negative that can really come from that, regardless of who that is. It could be, yeah. It could be a homeless person on the street. It could be somebody that's in jail or somebody that's on drugs or a drunk driver, like anything, like to understand where they're at, where they're coming from. As long as it's from an open mind, I think there's something to take away from any type of a deep understanding of people. Mm-hmm. We're so simple and so complex,
All at the same time, right?
Right.
I'm drawn to something you said about just if we come at this from a place of curiosity. And in my agency, when I had it, that was actually, curiosity was one of our core values, because as I tried to dissect, just gaining some self-awareness, like what makes me good at creating marketing strategy and helping people, what's helping. And I discovered through a process that curiosity was one of those things. And one of my favorite books by Michael Bungay Stanier, the Coaching Habit, which is phenomenal. He talks about just staying curious a little bit longer. What has helped you stay curious a little bit longer? Because obviously at this point in business, you got more than a decade. So you could almost say been there, done that, got the t-shirt, like you can and read people well. What helps you stay curious even though you're well experienced and intelligent?
It's problem solving. I would attribute that to part of my personality. I really like debating. I really like mm-hmm. challenging opinions. I will argue against my beliefs for the sake of arguing. So like my favorite color is blue, and I will argue with you on why blue is not the best color because reasons, just because I like that mental exercise. And, you know, I spent a decade inside of the retail industry, and I ended up living inside of like a Groundhog Day, where we were doing the same thing over and over again. I was like, show up, do the thing, et cetera, et cetera. It was on repeat, right? Like autopilot. When I got out of that, and this, luckily for me, it's always a new problem to solve with every client. We may work with a law firm, and then we may work with another law firm, and they're trying to accomplish something completely different. Even though they're both inside of family law, inside of the same county, they're still trying to do two different things. They have two different missions. They have two different goals. So that's what holds my attention at the end of the day.
Gotcha. Is taking into account the different variables at play in any given situation.
Like absolutely.
Saying, yep. Like gamify it, which is always fun. And then you can give yourself some points. It will create right. Hoffman points. I scored 10 today. Now, I was always fascinated by that. That's why one reason why I liked being on agency side as opposed to in-house is I got to see so many different businesses, even if they were same industry. Mm-hmm. I got a different set of variables. They had a different goal, those sorts of things. And I think it sounds like you've applied that as well to the people you employ, is you've got a different person in front of you that is wired a particular way and different from their coworker. They have a different set of personal and professional goals that you're trying to understand and help them take steps whilst also achieving the service agreement with the client. So has that helped you as you have, you know, recruited and retained talent to almost see them the same way as what are the variables here? This is a bit of a game, not in a rude way, but how can I figure this out to help them advance?
Yeah. So we maximize, like we squeeze every drop out of our staff. And we do so in a really cool way. So we don't have a hierarchy inside of the agency, which is really weird for a lot of people coming into it. So everybody can delegate tasks to each other. Everybody can call meetings. Everybody can, like, there's no hierarchy. I mean, yes, there's a hierarchy on paper at the end of the day, right? Like, that's just the way that works legally. But inside of that, like, my team is sending me tasks. They're telling me, you need to go do this, or I can't do this because reasons, and I need to pull you into it because whatever, right? So that's really cool. I've empowered all of them to really take charge in this shared leadership space. And the other thing is we are constantly working towards figuring out what you're bad at. Like, we celebrate whenever we're bad at things. So if we biff a project for a client and they let us know, that's an opportunity for growth. We ask for anonymous feedback all the time, so they're comfortable giving it to us. If they're inside of like a long-term relationship, you don't want to say, Kenny, you're stinky. But if it's anonymous, I might be more likely to say that. So that's amazing. Same thing for my team. Like, you really hate writing out emails and sending them off to people. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out a way to either like boilerplate that or template it or get you as far away from having to do that as possible, because you're going to do it slower. You're going to be less productive. It's going to be like a lower quality. Mm-hmm. Whereas you would rather pick up the phone. Let's do that. Let's figure out how you can pick up the phone at all of these opportunities, because you're going to make 5 more phone calls per day than emails you would arguably send.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And it's a really weird shift. And it takes, on average, I would say it takes people around 6 months to a year to actually understand that it's not like company culture on paper, and this is actually the way we're doing things.
Yeah. I've experienced that too, where somebody comes in and, is this really how it works? I'm not totally sure I'm going to relax into this.
Yeah, it's a trap. I don't trust it.
Right. I love that, because you're spot on. When I teach my clients, when you're evaluating somebody for a position, you look at FIT, and that's an acronym for fuel, impact, and timeliness. And within fuel, the simple definition is the intersection of what you're good at and what you love to do and what you're energized by. Because there is, to your point, like a productivity multiplier. If they're right. good at it, they enjoy it, they like it, they're energized by it. And in return, I would imagine that's allowed you to run maybe a leaner organization than some other agencies of similar output, simply because you're now maximizing for that sweet spot.
I would, I've never run other agencies, so maybe so, maybe not, right? It's anecdotal at best.
Right.
I do know that it's working really well for us, and from a culture fit, mm-hmm. everybody likes it. We don't do time clocks. We just, it's different. In my opinion, and in a lot of our clients' opinions, we end up getting a better product because of that, right? Like, it's kind of like the happy cows make butter milk, or there's like something about that. It's like a gimmicky thing. I feel like that kind of applies to this. Like, happy people make better product.
Yeah. And I would suspect, and this has been my experience, when you're working with creatives that and neurodiverse people, is leaning into that really allows their truest, most authentic self, the best version of themselves, to come into their work. Similar to what you were working on for yourself, is you bring your whole self to work, is you're sort of enabling them to do that, instead of the traditional, hey, check your stuff at the door, get this done the way I would have done it or the way it was written originally, and we're going to take no account for how you're wired.
I love like all of the opportunities when I can be wrong. Like, those are the best, right? Because I don't have all the answers, right? Like, I have my experiences. I've done the things that I've done. So to have Kenny come in and be like, hey, I know this is how we've been doing it, but maybe this makes more sense because reasons. I love mm-hmm. that. Let's do that. Let's constantly concentrate on evolving and being more efficient, so that we can really try to get away from this whole hustle culture, right? Like, that's like such a big thing. And I was sucked into that for a long term. 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm so prideful on never having a vacation. And no, like, that doesn't, there's more to life than just punching the clock or working or chasing somebody else's dream.
It's almost like, woohoo, I'm headed to an early grave. Is some ways, once you finally stop and slow down and look around, that you realize that's really what you've been doing. I've been wrestling with some of that myself, because it's easy, especially when you are an owner, is you feel the weight of payroll and responsibility. It's an easy place to float into, because you believe it'll all fall apart if you're not constantly working. Mm-hmm. So if someone's listening to this, a leader, maybe they're an owner, maybe they're just a senior leader, and they say, man, I'd love to work in that environment. I love that, the curiosity, bringing out the best, really figuring out how people are wired, even if they're motivated by just saving money on payroll, because you'll have to hire less people. Obviously, this, you've been able to explain it in roughly 30 minutes, but that didn't happen. You didn't get here overnight. What would you tell someone who wants to move in that direction to do? They want their version of that in their company, and they want to take a step there. They're not going to get there overnight, but they want to take a step there. What would you advise them to do as that first baby step, that is something that could be done in the next 24 hours?
depending on the size of whatever your structure is for your company. So we'll just assume that you have in-house employees. I would schedule meetings with them, with all of your staff, one-on-one meetings, and ask them how they're doing. It's not, you have friends and you have family members, right? Like you have people that you care about and you have people that care about you. Why are the people that work for you or the people that you employ or manage, why are they any different? Right. And maybe you need to do some soul searching and dig into that. Maybe it's from a place of scarcity. Maybe it's from a place of toxic leadership that has been just projected on you for however long. I don't know. But I think that's just check in with people. Like, we're all humans. And I don't think that we were made to work. I don't think that's our purpose, is to go and punch a clock and make widgets and then die. But also I think that people like to have meaningful work. People like being engaged. People like being a part of something bigger than themselves. And I guess case in point, we're attracted to community, right? Look at organized religion, look at political parties, look at college alumni, look at friend groups, right? From high school or college. People like people.
Right. You reminded me of a saying that one of my pastors would say a lot, and he would remind me of this, is you work to live, you don't live to work.
Do you think that is true for a lot of people?
I don't think most people can accept that.
That's hard.
It is. It's almost a daily battle for me to stay in that place. So I don't say that as, oh, that's a cute little thing that you just flick it out there, put it on a poster, and suddenly you're magically better. Like, that's tough. When I wake up and I see a wife and five kids that all have different needs, and we got to eat and do this and go to school, and it sometimes feels like I'm living to work. And occasionally I get a break from work to go enjoy 30 minutes of something, and then it's right back to the grind. But I personally believe that's is not how we're wired and engineered, is to be a unit of productivity.
I don't think so either. And I think that, like, you know, being in America, right? Like, we're fueled by capitalism. A lot of us are exploited by the machine. And I get it, right? If my people aren't doing the things, I don't eat. So that's just the way that it works in this type of a society. I think we need to, like, I think it's important to check in with yourself. Like, why are you doing the things that you're doing? And check in with the people that you care about, or like, you're, like you said, you have the kids and your family that you're trying to take care of. So you're doing that. So if you'll work on a Saturday because you're trying to give them these things, check in with them. Make sure the problems you're trying to solve are actual problems for them, and not just something that you've concluded. I was guilty of that for a long time. Like, I guarantee you, when you are old and your kids are grown, they're never going to say, I wish we had the new phone or the new video game system or whatever it is. It's going to be, you remember when we played catch? Do you remember when whatever, and I forgot my lines in the school play? Do you remember when we went to the zoo and the whatever? Like, it's experiences, not stuff. And myself, and probably you and anybody listening to this, I think it's easy to get caught up in the, well, I need to do the thing to collect the coins so I can go buy the boxes of crap nobody cares about or remembers. When in reality, you're treating those times with your children, that Halloween or that Sunday or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. I would drop a mic if it weren't so expensive to replace. That was well said. John, I'm sure that we have many more topics that we can cover. Well, maybe we need to spin up a mini series. But if somebody wants to know more about you, your agency, the community work you're doing in the Detroit area or anything else, where would you send them? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, Fusion Marketing. We're on all of the social media platforms. We're based in Detroit, Michigan. You can find us at tryfusionmarketing.com. I like connecting with people on LinkedIn so that they can see all of my short form video and my rants. And it's fun for that. I'm very authentic. And I cuss a lot, unlike on here. But so there's that. And as far as the community garden goes, it is a registered 501c3. We are currently serving the McComb metro area right outside of Detroit, Michigan. And if somebody wanted to, if they were moved to, say, make a donation or something like that, they can do that from the website. That is urbanseed.info. And we share weekly updates for anybody that wants to follow along or learn about gardening or urban agriculture. They can do that through Facebook. And again, that's going to be Urban Seed.
Okay. We will link all of that up in the show notes. So if anybody was really interested or moved to donate, which I hope you are, go check out those links, visit. And then if you have any questions, obviously you got multiple ways to go and connect with John. Thank you so much for being a guest today. I hope to have you back in the future. If for any reason you got, and I'm not saying that like I'd be mystified, if you got value from this conversation, and Lord knows there were plenty of opportunities for you to, or any of the other episodes, I would be grateful for you to rate, review, subscribe, whatever the button and the thing and the stuff is on the platform you're consuming this. I would be grateful not just for the feedback, because I'm always looking to improve and make this a value to you, the listener, but also get it in front of more people. This may be a free, low-cost way for you to impact another leader's journey by helping them hear the conversation they need to hear to unlock their next step. So that's an easy way to pay it forward. But until next time, remember, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.